Swift on Radio.
Oh, well, what an interesting couple of weeks it's been. Sorry for the hiatus, but as I said on the previous show, I was not in town during either of the last two weekends. Over Labor Day weekend, I went to Madison, Wisconsin for WisCon, the feminist-themed science fiction convention, which had many, many layers of awesome, I gotta say. I got to meet lots of other geeky people and saw in person the great Kim Stanley Robinson, author of Red Mars, and his more recent triumph, 2312, which is a novel that won the Nebula Award for Best Novel last year. Then the following weekend, in addition to working yet another Saturday of overtime, I had to visit a friend of mine who was in the hospital. She's fine now, but I was really worried, and at the time, she was bleeding internally and really needed some looking after, and I'm so very happy that she's okay now. But amidst all that chaos, I did get to see the musical performance of The Book of Mormon, written by Trey Parker and Matt Stone, the creators of South Park. Now, that show is amazingly funny in a way that only South Park can really be when it's poking fun at something. But really, the best joke in that whole show came not in the stage production itself, but in the program. Yes, the program, the little booklet that they hand you when you walk in and watch the show. Yes, the program had, in about its like fourth or fifth page or so, an advertisement for Mormonism. Yes, saying something to the effect of, well, now you've seen the show, wouldn't you like to read the book? And this is right in the middle of the program for a show that literally rips Mormonism a new one. And I remember thinking, don't these idiots know what this show is all about? But then a couple of pages after that, there's another ad. And another couple of pages later, there's another one after that. And of course, you know, they're careful to make the images of the people they're portraying as Mormons to be all, you know, racially diverse. So you see a picture of a Hispanic woman and a young black man, and they all say they're Mormons. Well, yes, the show does kind of end on a universalist note, where all the characters, despite their misgivings and misunderstandings, end up calling themselves Mormons anyway, even though they're really not. But that's just sort of a political dodge by, you know, Parker and Stone on that one. For the Mormon Church to seriously think they can turn this stage play, which just tears their religion to shreds, into a true proselytization effort, well, that's truly naive. And that, my friends, is what I call a joke. But when your religion is already a joke, I guess you tend not to see that. Okay, let's fuck the frog, and let's get this show started, okay? Yeah, that's right, fuck the frog. Inside joke there, by the way. All right, well, greetings to all you fine ladies, extraordinary gentlemen, gifted youngsters, and exceptionally talented household pets. This is the Swift Radio Hour, a.k.a. the Sacred Cow Verst House, for Sunday, June 7th, 2015. I'm your host, Eric J. Hildeman, and here you'll be challenged by logic and critical thinking as you learn to appreciate the immense value of cold, hard truths instead of comfy illusions. We are the official radio show and podcast of SWIFT, which stands for the Southeast Wisconsin Freethinkers, the largest and oldest group of atheists and agnostics in the greater Milwaukee area. Be sure to check out our website at www.swiftnow.org. This podcast is being recorded live from Plum Island Animal Disease Research Center, where Hannibal Lecter is currently taking a stroll. Actually, it's being recorded live from Bucket Works. Actually, no, it's not being recorded live from Bucket Works. I was not able to record there today. It's being recorded from my home at Greenfield, Wisconsin, although we've got a segment that is coming up where we're interviewing Zveta Laning, who is starting up a new group, and we recorded that segment at her home. So, we're recording it in wonderful Greenfield, okay, where I have a cat, not Shadow. No, this cat is Isabel, and I cannot escape this cat. There's a whole big story about this cat. I'm not going to go into detail about the cat. She doesn't deserve to go into detail. Do you? Do you, Isabel? No, you don't. I didn't think so. Okay. You can listen to this podcast at sacredcowversthouse.podomatic.com. There you will find every episode of this podcast permanently available, where you can access the RSS feed, subscribe via iTunes, or download the Podomatic app. We will also soon have episodes available at Swift's website, www.swiftnow.org. He was briefly there, then they changed the programming a bit, and it wasn't available. And our webmaster apologized to me about that, but he says he will get it fixed soon, and I believe him. So it will be there. We'll have two permanent archives for the show. Quick disclaimer, opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily those of the Southeast Wisconsin Freethinkers, its members, or its affiliated organizations. So, for example, if I say that Carly Fiorina... I've already used this one. Good grief. All right, so for example, if I say something quick and witty and funny and silly and totally insulting to someone, that would not necessarily be an official position of the group. Yes, I actually debase myself that way. Well, what can I say? I'm kind of making it up on the fly. Swift is an organization which is open to all political affiliations, ethnicities, and viewpoints. So, we will go on to our interview with Veda Lenning, and then we'll do our usual segments after that. So here is the segment, which is the interview that I did over at her home earlier today. Enjoy. All right, and then we are currently recording. So, time to introduce the people who are here in the, I'm going to say, quote-unquote, studio here with me. We have Admiral Akbar the Cat, who has decided to curl up on my recording equipment right at this moment, because right at this moment I am recording at Veda Lenning's house, who is my other guest, and I'm going to be interviewing her in a little bit because she's starting up a new group. Muhammad the Teddy Bear is here with me also, as always. And so, Veda, why don't you tell us about this new group that you're starting up here, because it's a nice little exciting bit of news here.
Well, thank you for talking to me about it today. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
The new group is called SWISS, Southeastern Wisconsin Secular She Thinkers.
All right. And so why the focus on women? Why is your is this – actually, I can ask two questions at once. Okay, is this a group just for women? Okay, that it's an all-girls club, or how is this going to work?
No, everyone is welcome. The name Secular She Thinkers is intentional. Mm-hmm. She Thinker can be a man or a woman, as long as you have a feminist-friendly way of thinking. You know, you can't be a She Thinker if you hate women. You know, you can't be a sexist She Thinker. That's not what a She Thinker is. And secular, we picked that word specifically because we want to be open to as many people as possible. And you can be a secular theist or a secular atheist as long as you agree with the separation of church and state. You're cool with us. And whatever you believe, you can leave that outside because it won't be a place to proselytize or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But if a secular theist should choose to come to the meetings, they would be completely welcome. Their ideas would be heard. And there's plenty that the secular movement can do to accommodate secular theist women as well as secular non-theist women.
All right. So your focus being on women for this particular group, I totally forgot my own question now. I hate it when that happens. I lost my train of thought on that.
Because at some point
I'm going to like totally go off on a tangent and ask you about Bruce Jenner again, just because I love your thoughts on that. But, okay, I know what I was going to say. There really is kind of a problem with misogyny in the free thought movement in general. And it's everywhere. It's not just, you know, the free thought movement. It's kind of a holdover from days when, you know, as the 1970s Disney cartoon The Rescuer said, when it was a man's world, you know.
Like the good old days. Like it was the good old days for the women.
The good old days, per se. It's not the good old days. Of course not. But I think my microphone's a little warm here. Because of that, you know, that problem is this sort of a solution that you could see could be applied across the free thought movement as a whole, that there could be more, you know, separate groups that are more tailored to women? Because we know the women are out there. We know that they do join groups, but maybe they're all volunteering for Planned Parenthood or NOW or NARAL or any other, you know, particular group like that. So is this something that, you know, you think could be applied on more of a widespread scale?
Well, yeah, there are definitely female activists out there, and there's definitely a community of women whose voices are not being heard in the secular community. The Pew Research Center just put out a new study on the 12th of May, so it's very recent, and they covered a bunch of demographics of nons and showed how they're increasing. And the millennials are 43% of the nons. So 43% of the people who identify as nons right now are under 30.
Sure.
Is that what,
sure,
that's
sounds
what millennial
right.
means?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, okay, so if you wanted to think about that, you could think about how would you want to get a message out to people under 30? What kinds of media would you want to use to address them? Mm-hmm. And if you're looking to get secular women involved, how could you use those social media sites to reach them? Okay, so that's something that we think about and we're doing, because the women are out there. Mm-hmm. But the secular community in general is not necessarily an inviting place for women. You know, the ratio is 3-1. Three men to every one woman, and women will come to the meetings, and then they will see that, okay, yeah, there's a lot of white males here, and there's nowhere for me to bring my kids. There's nowhere for me to breastfeed.
Yeah.
There's you guys aren't even talking about anything that really pertains to my life, and I only have 2 hours a month to dedicate to this, and I really don't want to sit around and talk about the 50 new ways God isn't real.
Right.
I want to do something enriching. I want to do something for my children to be enriched. I want to do something that will help me build a social network for support, and I want education, and I want resources to meet other needs that I might have. Secularism is not doing a very good job of that. Religion, on the other hand, which I personally am an atheist, and I do not think of religion as a good thing, but that doesn't mean everything religion does is wrong. Religion does some things right, and one of the things they do right is they provide a lot of safety nets for women. And yeah, they're really terrible to women, and they subjugate women and oppress women, yes. But women do have certain needs, and women do not necessarily feel safe being the one, or maybe one of two women in a room full of 30 men, because there's just no one for them to identify with there, and then they just listen to the other, and it's just not attractive. So they leave, and they go somewhere else, and they probably don't go to a church for those things if they're already moved out of that stage in their life. But they'll just be at home alone, you know, or they'll be on the internet, and they'll be being part of communities that aren't where they are living and doing the best that they can do for their family and do all the live things we do. Like, you know, I'm part of SWIFT also. I'm a member of that group.
Yes.
And I've done a great deal to kind of change the way that SWIFT operated. They were kind of a coffee and donut sort of group, and that's all well and good, but there weren't very many women. And when I came, I brought more of a social kind of tone to the group. I did start using social media, the Facebook, and started building up the Facebook community and reaching young people. And we've had a lot of people come out to the meetings, putting pictures up on the meetups, having party meetups, having our social that we used to have at this Yano boring restaurant and take it to a more fun place, a place that was themed along sort of with what we think at the group. And so those sorts of things were good. They were really good, and they really helped SWIFT. But they weren't necessarily good for meeting the needs of women. And misogyny and sexism are big topics these days in the news. And I really was thinking a lot about it. And I went through some things with my personal life where I realized I needed people to reach out to. And there were certain needs even I had. I don't have children. So that was never really a concern of mine. But I started thinking about these things. And then I went to a new meetup that was being had in our area called Walk and Talk, where we just meet and we walk for exercise and we talk about whatever is on our minds. And I met a woman there. Her name is Anne. And we got along fine the first time. And then the second time I went, it was just her and me. So it was just two women. There was no one else there.
Mm-hmm.
And she really opened up to me about some of the feelings that she was having and some of the things that she felt was missing. Like she suggested we do a book club, which I thought was a good idea. And I've seen that before.
Sure.
But we would pick topics for books that were related to secularism or women, or pick female authors, or pick male authors who talk on female subjects or female topics or issues. And I thought that was a great idea. And then another woman came to me, and she had another need that wasn't, you know, being talked about. And she had ideas about what we could do. And then I met another woman, another thing. And so just in my whole entire life, I've never really been a person who just was just one of the girls, and I was just always concerned with the women's issues and all of that. That really wasn't a person that I was. And I had never experienced sexism in the movement personally from any of my peers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a kind of an outspoken girl, and I can stand up for myself. So I never really had that problem. Plus, my husband's almost 10 feet tall, and he scares everybody, so nobody's going to, you know. But I took a break from the group and decided on my own separately because of all these women talking to me that there was a real need in my area for a women's group.
Mm-hmm.
And there are plenty of good examples in the secular community of women in leadership, like FFRF and the Richard Dawkins Foundation.
Sure.
So there was plenty for me to go off of there. And then I spoke to a friend of mine. Her name is Mandisa Thomas, and she started the Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta.
Yep.
So she has experience in starting a group from the ground up, and she gave me a whole bunch of tips and tricks and good advice, and my juices just really started flowing. And I talked to some other ladies, and they gave me ideas for our logo, and it all just came together almost like magic in just a very short period of time. And that all started 3 weeks ago. And then, so this is a very new group, but we already have over 200 people on Facebook. And I haven't boosted that at all. It's just organic.
Awesome.
And there are at least 7 or 8 women who are like, I'm going to that first meetup, or we're definitely going to do this. And they're just keep pumping me with idea after idea after idea for things we can do. There's no limit to the wonderful activities we're going to be having. And they're going to be child friendly. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be places for women to breastfeed if they want, and it will always be set up in a safe manner where no kind of bullying or anything like that will be allowed, but it will be a place for open discussion and even disagreements.
Sure.
Because I think disagreements are a good thing when it comes to conversations like this, because someone might ask you a question you don't have the answer to. You might have a gut feeling that you're right, but if they ask you something you don't know the answer to, that's an opportunity for you to learn. And either you'll change your mind because you're wrong, which we should all be open to that if we're really free thinkers and critical thinkers. Or you're right, and you will learn better ways to express why you're right, statistics and philosophical arguments or anecdotes that can set a very good illustration for what you're trying to get across. So I really do enjoy it when people disagree with me, and I think that it's fun to disagree with people sometimes. Give them a good spanking.
Sure. I always find that I learn the most from people who disagree with me. You know, give my ideas a good test run and, you know, shock harden them, if you will. Kind of leads me into my next question. I was, I'm glad to hear that, you know, you've been around for 3 weeks now, you say, and, you know, have a lot of connections already started. Do you have a meeting set up or have had a meeting or are about to set up a meeting? Where are you on that stage?
Well, we've had private meetings on social media. We got some people involved who wanted to be in the leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kicked around the ideas and decided exactly what the name was going to be and exactly what the logo was going to be and exactly the direction we wanted to take the group in. Our mission is to help secular women in the southeastern Wisconsin area and raise awareness for women's issues in the secular movement. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Basic, plain and simple. That can encompass a lot of things, but as long as it's a secular issue, mm-hmm. and it's something women are interested in or could help women or hurts women and we need to talk about it, then that's an issue that that's something we'll talk about. And if it's in Wisconsin, that's something yes. we talk about, because there's a lot of things going on in Wisconsin right now that we're concerned about.
Oh, yes. And certainly things that are of grave concern to women. Our wonderful governor
mm-hmm.
Is out there. I don't know how in the world we're going to be able to put up 3.5 more years of this shit, but I'll tell you, the storm has definitely reached the third coast of the Midwest right now.
And it's reaching my vagina, yes. and that's pissing me off.
Yep. And not just yours.
Right.
And yeah. So, and somehow in the midst of all of this silliness, this, you know, wonderful governor of ours thinks that he's going to actually get nominated or actually win the presidency. I don't think he's going to win. But
megalomaniac much?
Yeah, right. But that's getting slightly off track. Now, with the... how often do you think you're going to be able to meet? Because Swift has had kind of a monthly thing, and we're trying to break out of that to go to, you know, something where at least there's something happening every week. Mm-hmm. And is that something that Swiss is going to do as well?
Well, we're going to have all kinds of things, that are real-life meetups. There's online coffee shops that we are going to try.
Online coffee shops?
Yeah.
With online coffee?
Well,
could I have an online cappuccino?
It's an online coffee house. That's what it's called.
Okay.
And you all, it's like a Google Hangout or whatever, but it's completely free. And
okay.
It's we're going to try that.
Oh, I wanted to have like a Google hot chocolate with the you know, digital marshmallows. That'd be great.
And we're going to have meetups in places like the park, so that the moms can bring their kids and their kids can play, and we can all sit around and talk.
Okay.
We are going to do the book club. We are going to do parties. In fact, our big first inaugural event that is going to be a real event and not just a meetup is going to be the Halloween party.
Oh, all right.
And it will, again, be a Hunger Task Force food drive. But this year, it's not going to be hosted by Swift and sponsored by Swift. It will be hosted and sponsored by Swiss.
Okay.
The Southeastern Wisconsin Secular She Thinkers. And our guest of honor is Shelley Siegel.
Yeah.
Yes. And she's coming all the way from Australia to be
I'm
our
like
guest
a 5-year
of
old kid on Christmas morning with a full bladder over this one.
So you
I am
will
excited.
Be there.
I will be there.
Totally. And
will,
the theme this
I will
year,
sing along.
Yeah. The theme this year is gods and goddesses.
All right.
And so that I'm going to be pumping that up on the Facebook page
okay.
and getting everybody excited, get their juices flowing about ideas that they can dress
everybody
as.
Everybody better not dress as Thor. That's just,
you know,
that would
Jared
be so disappointing.
Said he was going to be Thor.
Well, then I will not be Thor in that case.
I was researching Greek goddesses yesterday.
Sure.
And there are so many.
Somebody better be Wonder Woman.
And
she's Diana of Ephesus, for crying
oh,
out loud.
Oh, really? Oh,
well,
yeah. I did know that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So. Yeah. Okay, anyway.
So, yeah, and actually, the one of the things that really springboarded me into trying to get the word out there for women's issues was there was a convention in Chicago called Skeptic Camp.
Yes.
And I got the opportunity to speak there, and I was allowed to pick whatever topic I wanted. And since all this stuff was going on with me at the time, with people coming to me and saying things, it was on my mind. And so I told them that I wanted to talk about women in secularism, the challenges we face, and how we can overcome them together.
Mm-hmm.
And I outlined some things about sexism, the definitions of sexism, misogyny, and feminism.
Mm-hmm.
Made it clear that feminism is about equality. It's not about supremacy, female supremacy over men.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said about who it affects, and it affects women and men,
mm-hmm.
this sexism in our movement, and it limits our movement's growth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that hurts the movement. And that secular women raise secular children. The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world.
Yeah.
And That is an important way to grow our movement. I don't believe in childhood indoctrination, and it's not my job to teach your kids how to think critically. That's the parents' job.
Yeah.
But my group can help give those tools to women, give them books that they might want to read, or give them anecdotal advice from the other mothers and what they've gone through and how they've done it, and build a real support network around those ideas.
Yeah.
And I list out probably 15 or more different ways that we can invite women to the table and do events and find meetup places and do activism that benefits women. And there's not enough of that right now. And no offense to you being a white male yourself, but it is the things that the movement is going to focus on are going to be the things that are important to the people who show up. And that's not always the people who are right. That's the people who are there. And women aren't there right now, so our voices aren't being heard.
Yes.
And I want to get more women there. I want to get more women in leadership, and I want to get those issues out there, and I want to get something done about it. And I feel like we can really do that because all these women are just sitting out there waiting for me to say, hey, we're here. Come on out.
Okay.
You know?
I happen to agree with that. Now, here's where I get to go off on my fun little tangent here, okay? Let's say, just for the sake of having fun in this discussion, that Caitlyn Jenner wanted to join this group. And what would your reaction be to that?
Well, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
And we would welcome any trans person, trans women, trans men, anyone. If it doesn't matter if you identify as a woman, then we are the group for you, because we will be addressing those issues. We welcome LGBTQ community. We welcome any minority, Latinos, Blacks, And we also welcome theists, too. Like I said before, you can be a secular theist. We want to create an open and safe environment so that women's issues can be addressed. We really probably are not going to be interested in talking about necessarily circumcision or any of the other MRA kind of topics or whatever. We have a very specific focus, and that's on women's issues. So if you're a male and you would like to come join us to help bring awareness to women's issues that will affect your mothers, your sisters, your daughters, then come on out.
Okay. Should I wear my kilt?
You can wear whatever you want to, baby. Just don't flash anybody, because that would create an unsafe environment. You
know indeed. What I mean? Yes. No.
Well, you can stick to your
the sporran will stay
at the pub
down, m'lady. The sporran is not going anywhere. That was probably the worst Scottish accent I've ever done in my life. All right. Well, Veda, thank
it
you
was
so
great.
Very much. Thank you so very much for joining me today.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks right. for having me.
Okay. That was awesome. All right, that should give me enough on that. Okay, so on to the announcements. Okay, with the interview on the way, here's what's been going on. Swift's business meeting was today, so if you're hearing about it on this podcast, you missed it. But the next one will be on Sunday, July 5th at 11 a.m., and that's going to be back at our old location at the Chase Bank in Cudahy on the corner of Layton Avenue and Packard. Meet there. And we are not going to be meeting at Bucket Works for at least a little while. It looks as though different groups are going their different ways, as atheist or agnostic groups often do. And because of differences of opinion among various members of the leadership, people are basically deciding that it's best not to intermingle too much at this point. So we're meeting at our old location, again, Chase Bank in Cudahy on Layton and Packard. That's going to be Sunday, July 5th at 11 a.m., which is, let's see. Well, we're looking to, have something nice, big, fancy, and awesome. So we're still going to be scouting out for other locations. So if you have any suggestions, be sure to email me or any other of the leadership members of the Swift group. Speaking of which, okay, once a month's really not enough, so we're going to try and do something every week. Any suggestions we have about that will be great. We want to start up a gaming group. That'll be really really good if we are able to manage to pull that off. And speaking of weekly socializing, we're going to be doing a weekly walk, talk, fitness get together, which is every Friday at Greenfield Park, which is located north of Lincoln Avenue between 116th and 124th. Everybody meets in the lot by the swimming pool area near the west side of Greenfield Park at 9 a.m. So if you're looking to socialize and maybe get in shape a little bit, go check it out. The park is a beautiful place to be. Now, every summer, Swift has its summer solstice get-together. We've set it this year on June 20th at Idle Isle Park in Muskego. We've had it there for the last few years, and it's always been awesome. So we'll have a grill for burgers and brats. It's potluck for food and snacks. People wish to bring beer, they can do so, and I plan to. It's just going to be a great time, so be sure to check that out. I think noon, unless I hear otherwise, on June 20th, and look forward to that. Well, what an interesting week it's been in the news. Yeah, ISIS has banned the breeding of pigeons because pigeons flying overhead are showing, apparently, their genitals to everything below, and this apparently is offensive to Allah. Really, do I really need to make fun of this? I mean, I have never in my life met the Ron Jeremy of pigeons with his junk hanging out where everybody can see it. I mean, hell, I can't tell male from female pigeon up close. Two convicted murderers, two for the price of one, broke out of a high-security prison in upstate New York by using power tools to cut their way through a steel backing of their prison cells. As they escaped, apparently one of them left behind a 3M sticky note which read, "Have a nice day." Such polite convicts, aren't they? And, you see, what I want to know is how they managed to use power tools to cut through without anybody hearing or noticing. That's just bizarre to me. In Boston, police arrested a man named Timothy Chapman for slipping through the turnstile at the subway station without paying the $2.10 fare. That's not the funny part. The funny part is after arresting him, they discovered that he had $7,000 on him in cash. Wow. Now that's what I call a penny pincher. Oh no, Star Trek actress Nichelle Nichols suffered a stroke this week. No, not another Star Trek actor gone. No, no. And she wore a red shirt. No. All right. And finally, actress Melissa McCarthy. I'm not going to talk about Melissa McCarthy. Heck with that. All right. Well, ask Eric. If you've got a question you'd like to ask me, go ahead and write me. It doesn't have to be about atheism. You can ask about sports, ask about science, ask me about science fiction, ask me about Christian theology, ask me about anything. You can email me at carlsaganjr@aol.com. Make sure to put Ask an Atheist in the subject line, or you can also reach me by Twitter. My Twitter name is @SaganJr, or you can simply find me on Facebook under my plain old name of Eric Hildeman. It is time for an episode of The Stupid Files. Dum 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 dum. The Stupid Files, the continuing story of intrepid investigator Thomas Munday, who finds examples of such stupidity, it's criminal. If only being this big a moron were somehow against the law. Dum 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 dum. Dum, dum, dum. This week, Detective Munday finds himself in Aurora, Colorado, where stupidity is finding surprisingly effective excuses to mistreat children. Della Curry was a lunch lady at the Dakota Valley Elementary School. Yes, I said was, because Della was recently fired for misconduct. No, she was not fired for being the mean-spirited wench that many students experience lunch ladies to be. In fact, Della is quite the opposite, a highly likable personality with a good heart. Nor was she fired for adding mystery ingredients to the lunches themselves, as students often suspect. No, Della was fired for the heinous crime of giving out school lunches to hungry children who could not afford it. Dun, 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 dun. I'd do it again in a heartbeat, says Della. I had a first grade schoolgirl crying in front of me because she didn't have money for lunch. Yes, I gave her lunch. Kids are increasingly falling through the cracks thanks to the economic trends of lower wages, higher costs of living, and draconian budget cuts of education programs. In Colorado, students from a family of four making less than $31,000 a year qualify for free school lunch, while family of four making less than $45,000 a year qualifies for reduced price school lunch. Yet in Colorado, $31,000 a year, $15 per hour, isn't even enough to rent a two-bedroom apartment. And here's an even more alarming fact. 51% of children in our nation's public schools do qualify for free or reduced-price school lunch, even under these horribly outdated guidelines. Dun, 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 dun. The cost of school lunches varies by school, age group, and district, but at Dakota Valley Elementary, the price per school lunch is $2.80. If that doesn't sound like much to you, then congratulations on having never been so broke that you're scrounging for change in your seat cushions to buy the 2 gallons of gas you need to get to work this week, and then something you can't afford to have happen winds up happening again anyway. Lawmakers who slash budgets and quibble over the cost of a school lunch are not only senselessly cruel, they are penny-wise and pound-foolish. Instead of asking about the cost of a school lunch, we should be asking about the cost of not providing all children with a school lunch, and not enough nutritious food in general. Over 15 million children in America live in food-insecure households. When we don't give our children enough to eat, we rob them of their health, of their ability to perform well in school, and the opportunity to reach their full potential as happy, healthy, and productive adults. Although schools are supposed to feed children in school lunch, regardless of their ability to pay, federal law only requires them to provide a slice of cheese on a hamburger bun and a container of milk. Dun, 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 dun. Curry told CBS4 that that is not sufficient, and adds that she has often paid for kids' school lunches out of her own pocket. And yes, Curry knows she broke the law in giving kids school lunches they couldn't pay for, but she insists that the law needs to be changed, and she has a valid point. And that concludes this week's episode of The Stupid Files. Dum, 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 dum. And now it's time for an episode of The Holy Babble. King David. The Israelites went on slaughtering willy-nilly under Joshua and settled the territories of those they'd killed off. Yet not all of those people were wiped out, and many generations of struggle ensued with them. One nation of people who were particularly difficult to conquer were the Philistines, who lived closer to the coastal regions. Since the Israelites had conquered the high ground, they were able to fend the Philistine armies off. But doggone it, those heathens had figured out how to make steel swords, which were stronger than the bronze weapons the Jews had. Thus, the Philistines kept getting invaded, but kept kicking Jewish ass every time. On one particular campaign, the two armies were standing off against each other eyeball to eyeball. The Philistines did not dare run up the high ground, and the Israelites didn't want to charge into an army with superior weapons. So the Philistines tried goading the Israelites onto lower ground by taunting them. They happened to have a gargantuan soldier named Goliath, who would challenge them to duels, which no one would dare take up. Finally, a poor shepherd boy named David, who had absolutely nothing to lose by taking a stupid gamble, took up the challenge and faced off against Goliath using the only weapon he was any good with, a slingshot. The Philistine armies roared with laughter at the little Jewish warrior, pelting the armored giant with stones. But wouldn't you know it, the kid got in a lucky shot under his opponent's helmet, cracking his skull and killing him. Everyone was stunned. The Israelite forces were so elated that they charged down the hill, and the Philistines were so flabbergasted that they panicked and ran. No amount of steel could help soldiers with their swords facing the other direction as they ran, and so they were cut down. It was a huge upset in favor of the Israelites, which turned into a rout, and the little Jewish boy, David, became a national hero. He was the toast of Jerusalem, was made captain in the army, and Princess Michal, the daughter of the Israelite king Saul, swooned over him and was given to him as a trophy wife. Not bad for one lucky shot. But David became so popular that King Saul began to see him as a threat. He deliberately put David in harm's way in battle. On a number of occasions, he even tried to kill him outright, but David, lucky duck that he always was, kept surviving. The entire nation loved him, including Saul's own son, Jonathan, who became David's best friend. Despite all this, Saul continued trying to kill him until it came to the point where David had to go into hiding outside the country. Saul's obsession with having his chief rival killed began to slowly drive him insane. And excuse me. And it became a major distraction for the country. As the king slowly lost his marbles, the nation took another blow as Samuel, the most noted prophet in the region, and one of the king's most trusted advisors, prior to his taking leave of his royal senses, that is, had died. The entire nation mourned him, and Saul sank into an even greater depression over it. Samuel had not only abandoned Saul beforehand, he had anointed David, making him the heir apparent instead of Jonathan. Now, all hope that Samuel would change his mind about that was gone. This became a military problem as well as a political one. Before one particular battle with the Philistines, Saul got a look at the vanguard of the opposing army and lost heart at how vast it was. "Boy, I wish Samuel were here," he said to himself. Then he began to think the unthinkable. "Go find a medium," he told one of his servants. "But, sire," he replied, "you expelled all the mediums from the country." "Go find one anyway," the king bellowed. "There's one in Endor," he replied. "And not that I'm into that kind of stuff or anything, you understand?" "Good enough." So King Saul disguised himself and went into Endor in the middle of the night. "I want you to conjure up a spirit for me," he told her. "I need his counsel." "Can't do it. You know that King Saul has outlawed that sort of thing. For all I know, you're going to conduct a sting operation to have me arrested." But Saul swore an oath to God, saying that she would not be punished for her conjuring. "Fine, fine. Who do you want me to contact?"
"Well, I'd like to speak with the prophet Samuel."
"Jeez, you must be in some dire straits, fella. Okay, here goes." And she summoned Samuel's spirit.
"What do you see?"
"I see a spirit coming out of the ground," she answered.
And through her, Samuel began to speak.
"Saul! Just what in the Sam hell do you think you're doing here?"
I need your advice," he said. "I'm fighting the Philistines tomorrow, and none of the other prophets will speak to me."
"As well they shouldn't, stupid old fart. Do you realize what you've done? By conjuring me in the middle of this story, you sent scriptural weight to the idea that consulting with mediums actually works. Generations of fools will read this passage and think it's possible to talk to the dead."
"Well, I'm talking to you," offered Saul.
"Which will be taken as proof positive that the narrative is concocted," Samuel scolded. "Of all the stupid, thick-headed, legendary Bible characters, you've completely ruined any chance for cohesive interpretation of Scripture."
What shall I do?"
"Go die," Samuel answered. "Get killed by the Philistines. You've done enough damage to the storyline already."
Saul was so depressed that he didn't eat. The battle the next day went poorly as a result, and both he and his sons, including Jonathan, lost their lives. By virtue of his having been Saul's son-in-law, David then became king. There were quite a few skirmishes with the remaining loyalists of King Saul, but for the most part, David's transition of power as king went smoothly. He then turned his military interests upon his neighboring countries. During his time of hiding in foreign lands, he had learned a great deal about them and was skilled in playing off one against another, then seizing the opportunity to wipe them out. He managed to steal the secret of steel-making from the Philistines and had new weapons forged for his armies. With these, he rendered the Philistines all but extinct. David, of course, could easily have had any single woman in the land that he desired. He'd already married a few. But one day, while walking on the roof of the palace, he managed to spot a woman bathing outside, and he was utterly struck with her. He dashed down the stairs and grabbed one of his servants. "Get up here, you've got to see this." From the roof of the palace, David pointed her out. "Who is she? See that woman? Find out who she is.
"Oh, her," the servant replied. "That's Uriah the Hittite's wife, Bathsheba. Quite a hottie, isn't she?"
"Well, she's married? Crap." David thought for a moment. "Go summon her anyway." The servant did so, and David found upon her arrival that she was just as smitten with him as he was with her. They made love for hours on end before they finally had to stop. Well, with that, things got complicated. Bathsheba became pregnant, and with Uriah off on the front, it wasn't difficult to surmise who the father was. So David employed a few tactics to get rid of Uriah surreptitiously. Unfortunately, they failed. David had to flat out tell his captain Joab to put Uriah on the front lines in battle, then withdraw so that he would be killed. This time, it worked. In a siege upon the enemy city, Uriah was overtaken by an enemy charge and was cut down. When Bathsheba heard that her husband was dead, she went through the customary period of mourning. Then almost immediately afterward, David proposed to her and they were married immediately, saving the country from a national scandal. Or so they thought. The prophet Nathan came to visit David to confront him about his sin.
Want to hear a story?
Nope.
There were two men in a certain town, one rich and one poor. The rich man had a very large number of sheep and cattle, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb that he'd bought. He raised it and grew up with it and his children. It shared his food, drank from his cup, and even slept in his arms. It was like a daughter to him. Now a traveler came to the rich man, but the rich man refrained from taking one of his own sheep or cattle to prepare for a meal for the traveler who had come to him. Instead, he took the ewe lamb that belonged to the poor man and prepared it for the one who had come to him.
David said, "As surely as the Lord lives, the man who did that deserves to die. He must pay for that lamb four times over because he did such a thing and had no pity."
"Thou art the man," hissed Nathan. "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I anointed you king over Israel. I delivered you from the hand of Saul. I gave your master's house to you and your master's wives into your arms. I gave you the house of Israel and Judah. And if all this had been too little, I would have given you even more. Why then did you despise the word of the Lord by doing what is evil in his eyes? You struck down Uriah the Hittite with a sword and took his wife to be your own. You killed him with the sword of the Ammonites. Now, therefore, the sword will never depart from your house because you despised me and took the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your own."
"How did you find out?" the king asked. "Did the Lord send you a vision?"
"Not really. Bathsheba's child was born 6 months after your wedding, so it really wasn't that tough to figure out."
"I see," said David. "But hang on. Didn't God specifically tell us to kill the Hittites, along with the Jebusites, Ammonites, Heshbonites, and all the rest of them? Didn't the Lord authorize to take their women as our own? Have I done anything differently except in sleeping with her first?"
"Exactly," Nathan replied. "Hittite or not, adultery is adultery. Yeah, I suppose you helped keep the Jewish strain pure by saving this Israeli woman from her mixed marriage, but the Lord appreciated that part of this little mess, but the Mosaic law is quite clear about harmless sexual fooling around. It's quite serious. So, as punishment, the Lord will take away most of your wives and give them to one who's close to you, and he will lie with them in broad daylight. You did this thing in secret, but the Lord will do this thing in the open, before all of Israel."
"Well, I don't get it. I had one fling, and someone else gets to do a whole bunch of flings as a result. Okay, sure, I screwed around. I admit it. I'm sorry, but I really think this punishment's kind of misplaced."
"Well," said Nathan thoughtfully, "I suppose the Lord has forgiven you. You will not die. But as further punishment, the firstborn child out of your union with Bathsheba will die instead."
"What?" bellowed David. "I screw up and the baby has to die?"
"Yeah, basically, that's it, yes."
"But that's not only unjust, it's pro-abortion thinking. Daddy sins, so the unborn child is sentenced to death." Nathan stared blankly at the king.
"What's an abortion?"
"Oh, just some medical technology that hasn't been invented yet," David explained. "Centuries from now, theologians are going to point at a particular passage of scripture and say, 'See, there it is, black and white. God approves of terminating pregnancy based on the wrongdoing of the father.' And in the case of rape, well, it's even more cut and dried."
"I don't think so," said Nathan. "People will make the scriptures to mean whatever they want them to mean, so they'll probably just pass that bit of interpretation off as radical liberal ideology and simply ignore how concrete the words are on the page."
"Yeah, I suppose you're probably right," David conceded. And that concludes this reading of the Holy Babel. All right, now we're going to go on and do one little item from the fish barrel, and I'm going to forego the usual sound effects because we only have one news story here. Jenny Lynn McCormick had just finished doing laundry and putting her 2-year-old son to bed when she heard a knock one evening in May 2011. McCormick, who is a single mother of three living off child support checks, opened the door to find a police officer. He was there to arrest her. The officer explained that McCormick had committed a serious felony under Idaho law by giving herself an abortion. He proceeded to barrage her with invasive questions about her body and her ex-boyfriend. And she said, "Well, how can you question me about my personal stuff?" McCormick demanded. This is according to an NPR report.
Well, the officer apparently responded, there's legal and there's personal. The state charged McCormick with intentionally self-terminating her pregnancy, which was a crime punishable by up to 5 years in prison, according to Idaho law. Now, several humiliating hearings went by. McCormick and her attorney defended the charge, and McCormick actually had given herself an abortion in late 2010, mostly out of desperation. There were no abortion clinics anywhere in southeast Idaho, and an abortion in Salt Lake City, 138 miles away, would cost $2,000. So McCormick procured an abortion pill online. Actually, she procured a bunch of them and took five, and she hadn't realized that her fetus was between 19 and 23 weeks old, and that she was much too far along in her pregnancy to have a safe non-surgical abortion. McCormick told her friend about the abortion. The friend then told her sister, and her sister told the police, who found the fetus wrapped in bags on McCormick's back porch. After a judge dismissed the case against her for lack of evidence, McCormick was legally off the hook, but she was also furious that Idaho had intruded so deeply into her private life, furious that its strict abortion laws had driven her to such desperate extremes, furious that other women in her situation might be forced to undergo unsafe abortions at their own hands. So McCormick and her lawyer, who happened to also be a doctor, brought a class action federal suit and sought to have a slew of Idaho's draconian anti-abortion laws struck down as unconstitutional. On May 29th, the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals granted McCormick's wish. It affirmed a lower court's invalidation of the self-induced abortion statute, as well as three other laws, one that barred abortions of fetuses at 20 weeks post-fertilization, one that required all second trimester abortions to occur in hospitals, and one that placed onerous burdens on clinics in the form of safety regulations. The litigation might not even be over. Idaho can seek a bigger panel of Ninth Circuit Court judges to rehear the case or appeal the ruling to the Supreme Court. Still, as states like Wisconsin move closer to enacting shockingly stringent and similar abortion laws, the decision is a powerful affirmation of constitutional autonomy in an age when that value is in short supply. All right, well, it is finally, I think, about that time. Yes, time to bring the grinding gears of the Sacred Cow First House to a grinding halt. I promise, as always, I'll do my very best to make sure that here you'll get the best possible brain food for your precious time. Next time, we'll discuss how to make s'mores, pornographic style. Make sure to also listen to other podcasts affiliated with the Free Thought Alliance of Milwaukee, such as the Mythos' Milwaukee Show, Craftcast, part of your complete secular Sunday breakfast at night. And make sure to check out the new show, The Secular She-Thinker, on the Secular TV Network. Details to soon follow. And don't forget that the Sacred Cow Worst House also exists as a blog. You can read original material and various segments heard on the show at sacredcowworsthouse.blogspot.com. Opening music theme is by Universal Dice. Check them out at universaldice.com. And the closing atheistic music sampler, which you'll hear in a moment, is the traditional Think for Yourself by George Robb. Until next time, this is Eric J. Hilderman reminding you that semen is great for smoothing out facial wrinkles. Good luck, thank you, and may Geb, God of the Earth, go with you. So long, everybody.
Think for yourself, little man. Don't let them tell you that they have the plan. Cause everyone's lost, chin deep in the sand. They're trying to sell to you. You shouldn't be buying. Think for yourself, little girl. Don't let them tell you how to run your world. Cause everyone's the same. Choking back that nervous hurl. And if they tell you they ain't,